Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
PBPA panel says innovations needed from water to air. The story was written by Miller McEwen, oil editor. Producing oil and natural gas has moved far beyond drilling holes in the ground. A range of innovations in the industry was the focus of a panel discussion at the Permian Basin Petroleum Association's annual meeting at the Petroleum Club. Sustainability is part of the industry's future and, quote, we need to find ways to embrace it, said Chris Davis, Senior Vice President, Milestone Carbon. His company just announced plans for a carbon capture and sequestration hub on about 10,000 acres that straddle Midland and Upton counties and is evaluating a larger site for a Delaware Basin hub. What he's learned after working 20 years in the upstream space is the importance of energy and the need to pursue sustainability. Quote, we need to pursue an economic, practical pathway to help the industry sustainably manage waste and emissions, he said. Progress is being made in sustainably managing the millions of barrels of water produced alongside crude oil and natural gas, said Robert Crane, Executive Vice President, Texas Pacific Water Resources. Quote, produced water recycling did not exist 6 years ago, Crane said, and recycling and reusing produced water still accounts for only about 30% of water volumes. That water has to go somewhere, he said, and the need is complicated by efforts to address rising seismicity. Quote, the next step is beneficial reuse. Take that water and treat it to the point it can be discharged, Crane said. Discharged into waters of the U.S., to recharge aquifers for irrigation, end quote. Getting to the next step of aquifer recharge could mean the city of Midland could add a barrel to its T-Bar Ranch water supply for each barrel taken out, he said. Finding ways to reduce costs and operate more efficiently are vital to continued growth, and Champion X is coming out with new products to meet those needs, said Ricky Kostner, regional manager. He said the company is looking for a combination of solutions merged into a single product. Especially in the newly entered field of emissions, he said Champion X offers flyby monitoring via airplanes and drones, as well as continuous monitoring via sensors on the ground. Also being sought are improved leak detection and repair and better combustion. Quote, we want one device that lets operators keep track of emissions, he said. Collaboration and centralizing data are key to innovation, the three speakers agreed. Quote, centralizing data, companies sharing lessons learned across the board, said Kostner. Craddock welcomes support from recent legislative session. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Railroad Commission Chair Christy Craddock termed the most recent session of the Texas legislature a success for her agency. Quote, the legislature figured out what we do and how important we are, she said during a visit to her hometown of Midland. Going into this session, Craddock said she and her fellow commissioners had requested to keep their budget, which they did. The agency was also given additional funding to hire more pipeline inspectors, especially since gathering lines are now under the agency's purview. The new funding allowed for the hiring of 50 more inspectors, as well as additional equipment. But, she said, the agency only has until next May to inspect gathering lines, and she estimates there is 100,000 miles of gathering lines across the state. Funding was also received to hire 5 more people for environmental permits and for a public engagement office. Also, she said, since the agency was tasked with mapping critical infrastructure in the aftermath of Winter Storm Uri in February 2021, it was given $3 million to automate those critical infrastructure maps. While the agency has overseen the state's oil and gas operations for more than a century, it is also becoming involved with new energy sources like hydrogen. The commission is sifting through 60 applications it received for the Texas Hydrogen Production Policy Council, which will have no more than 11 members and be chaired by the commission's chairman or their representative. Craddock said she is awaiting feedback from proposed changes to the agency's statewide Rule 8 that protects groundwater sources. Those changes include streamlining the rule into the agency's existing Chapter 4 regulations concerning environmental protection, updating requirements on the design, construction, operation, monitoring, and closure of waste management units, and improving the Commission's ability to track and collect data with respect to oil field waste transported throughout Texas. It is the first substantial overhaul of the rule in nearly 40 years, and Craddock credited Railroad Commissioner Jim Wright for his work over the last couple of years on the changes. Quote, there have been a lot of conversations with industry and other stakeholders. We'll see what the comments are now that we feel the rule is in good shape, she said. The changes now undergo an informal comment period with an in-person hearing at the Commission's offices in Austin on October 26, beginning at 10 a.m. A virtual hearing is scheduled for 9 a.m. on October 27th. She said that feedback will be studied, incorporated into the changes, and then offered for a formal comment period later this year or early next year. Quote, it's a pretty big rule, she said, of SWR 8. This is one of the more important rules. Cleaning the environment is important to us. We want to ensure the land is as clean as it can be. Water is important, end quote. Updating the rule and incorporating technical changes and best practices already being used inside the industry motivated the changes, she said. 2, the legislature had mandated certain changes regarding pits and to encourage water recycling and beneficial reuse and update the definition of drill cuttings. The commission is seeking primacy designation from the Environmental Protection Agency, allowing the commission to oversee carbon capture and sequestration operations, including permitting Class 6 carbon injection wells. Craddock said the application has been returned to the EPA after making some changes, and she hopes to receive a response sooner rather than later. Texas joins Louisiana in seeking primacy, something already received by North Dakota and Wyoming. She quipped that she'd like to see Texas beat Louisiana to the designation, especially given its long experience with utilizing CO2 in enhanced oil recovery. She sees carbon capture and sequestration as another way to create jobs and protect the environment. Quote, Texas has the opportunity to again be the leader, she said. It's amazing to me how much the industry creates jobs and develops new technologies. The industry is going to be here a long time, and I want to ensure Texas has consistent rules and regulations. Common sense rules and regulations and limited government make sense, I think. She added, quote, if you allow the industry to figure out how to innovate and not regulate it, they'll come up with some good solutions, end quote. PVPA's speaker says hydrocarbon demand growth continues. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Government policies, markets, and a macro environment are all ingredients in what Jeffrey Tillery, Chief Operating Officer of Veritin, an energy-focused knowledge platform, called This Soup, that is, an energy outlook. Serving as the luncheon keynote speaker at the Permian Basin Petroleum Association's annual meeting, Tillery offered a 10-year outlook, which he described as a typical corporate planning horizon. But he also offered a forecast for just 3 years from now. In 2026, he said, natural gas will continue to gain steam. There will be more frequent pricing cycles, both traditional and advanced nuclear technology gets a test drive. Momentum continues toward energy security. The U.S. Gulf Coast will be a project magnet as the Inflation Reduction Act stimulates an investment boom, but permitting issues delay projects and shale will no longer be the only game in town. Expanding his vision a decade to 2033, Tillery said hydrocarbon demand will continue to grow as developing countries place a premium on energy security and economic growth, and oil and natural gas will be sold on a certified methane-free basis as Scope 1 emissions are eliminated. He sees reduced opportunities for U.S. oil and gas growth, but U.S. energy could head in surprising new directions. Tillery said the U.S. and Europe strive to push carbon-free or fossil fuel-free policies on what he called the unlucky 6.7 billion people without access to affordable, reliable energy or even to energy at all is naive. Quote, they want a part of what we enjoy, he said. Just as there has been a reluctant acknowledgement that natural gas can serve as a cleaner bridge fuel, Tillery said that same incremental acceptance is coming for crude oil. Outside influences, such as Goldman Sachs and Jamie Dimon, Chief Executive Officer of Chase, have offered support for oil and natural gas. Such support, including from tech giants like Amazon, are needed, he said. To drive support for the oil and gas industry's continued license to operate hinges on support from industries outside energy, vocal leadership from the energy community, and the realization that, for consumers, ultimately prices matter. He cited Veritin's involvement in a hydrogen project to provide power in Los Angeles County and wondering if consumers know what they will pay as a result. Quote, 5 years from now, just as consumers know what they pay for a gallon of gas, they'll know exactly what they pay for power, and that will change mindsets to some degree, he said. West Texas Caravan highlights growth of electric vehicles. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. A caravan of electric vehicles of various sizes, from a school bus to a Volvo C40 and Ford Mustang Mach-E, came humming through Midland recently to highlight electric vehicles and stress the need to build out the state's electric transportation infrastructure. Conservative Texans for Energy Innovation believes in free markets, competition, and entrepreneurship, said Matt Welch, state director, during the caravan's Midland stop at the Electrify America charging station in the Walmart parking lot at 200 Interstate 20. Quote, why we're here is to let conservatives in West Texas know it's okay to be for electric vehicles, said Welch, as he stood next to a Hummer electric vehicle. He was driving the Volvo C40 along with Jade Gillespie-Doss, director of programs for the organization. Conservatives should appreciate the number of jobs created by what he called the electric vehicle revolution and the economic impact of manufacturers coming to Texas. Quote, it's the whole supply chain, high-tech electronics, battery recyclers, Welch said. He added he's aware of the misgivings people may have about electric vehicles, pointing out that no new technology is perfect or widely accepted on day one. Quote, I'm sure the horse and buggy people scoffed at Henry Ford, he said. Life changes, society changes, electric vehicles are here to stay. The juggernaut is here and, in fact, getting stronger, end quote. Jessica Keithan, director and co-founder of the Texas Electric School Bus Project, said the organization is the first and only nonprofit in the country to advocate for electric school buses and works to facilitate the transition to zero-emission buses in as speedy and equitable a fashion as possible. Quote, bus emissions hurt kids, she stated. Furthermore, school districts could save $175,000 over the lifetime of a single bus in maintenance and fuel costs. Not to mention, she said, that the big batteries on those school buses could be used to put power back into the grid in times of emergencies that result in power outages. Colleges could develop programs to train people to work on electric buses, maintain electric chargers, Keithan said. Quote, Texas could be a leader in electric vehicle maintenance education, end quote. Tom Smitty Smith, executive director of the Texas Electric Transportation Resources Alliance, said his group organized the caravan, quote, to let people know the future is electrifying rapidly. By 2030, he said, 50% of vehicles sold will be electric. They are cheaper to own and operate, with costs a third of traditional internal combustion cars, and, quote, they're more fun to drive. They're faster, they handle better, they're solid-feeling cars, end quote. Like Welch, he said the vehicles will create Texas jobs, and, in fact, about 20,000 related jobs have already been created. Quote, the first step is border-to-border charging network, and Texas Department of Transportation already has a plan to place chargers up and down the interstate, Smith said. Two, and this is important to West Texas, there's funding to place charging stations in 190 counties that don't have them, and TxDOT will help figure out where to place them, end quote. They could be placed along the interstate, or they could be placed in town as a way to attract visitors, he said. Since charging vehicles takes a while, he said those visitors will have time to dine at restaurants or shop in stores. There are a number of grants available to establish charging infrastructure and even to help school districts buy electric buses, Smith said. Smaller school districts using those grants to buy electric buses could reduce their costs enough to fund another teacher, he said.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Sunday, October 8th. Rayos is excited at chance for new life. The story was written by Kim Smith. While the reality still hasn't sunk in quite yet, James Rayos is already looking to the future. It's a future in which he wants to help others who, like him, were wrongly convicted of a crime and sent to prison. On Wednesday, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals declared Rayos innocent in the 1981 murder of Father Patrick Ryan, a murder he spent 20 years in prison for. Rayos, who is 66, was convicted of beating Ryan, age 49, to death at the Sage and Sand Motel in Odessa by an Ector County jury in June 1983 and sentenced to 38 years in prison. He served 2 decades before being paroled. In March, attorneys from the Innocence Project of Texas put witness after witness on the stand in Ector County District Court, Dan Whalen's courtroom. Each one testified there is absolutely no way Rayos could be responsible for the December 21, 1981 death of the Denver City Priest. Moreover, they said, recently discovered fingerprints link three dead men to the murder. After weighing that evidence, Whalen recommended in August the conviction be set aside in a 57-page document called Findings of Fact and Conclusions of Law. Quote, "It's still sinking in," Reyes said Thursday morning in a telephone interview, "but I'm very elated and so happy this day has finally come. It's a long time overdue, but I had patience," end quote. He can now move on, finally free of the false accusations against him, Reyes said. Quote, "Today's a very joyous day for me," Reyes said, noting it's also a joyous day for everyone who worked so hard to prove his innocence. Legally, there are a few other things that need to happen, Reyes's attorney, Allison Clayton, said. The Ector County District Attorney's Office needs to file a motion to dismiss the indictment against him, stating his innocence, and within 10 days of that filing, a hearing on the matter will have to be scheduled, Clayton said. Whalen will then have to sign an order dismissing it. Since prosecutors and the judge have already made their opinions known, that won't be an issue, she said. Once that order is signed, the law requires the state to pay Reyes a lump sum of roughly $2.2 million and $80,000 a year for the rest of his life, Clayton said. Reyes said he plans to celebrate the court's decision with a nice steak dinner. As for the money, quote, "That was never tantamount for me. That has always been about getting justice. But I plan to use the money to help others who are in the same boat I was, sent to prison after being wrongfully convicted," Reyes said. He intends to donate funds to the Innocence Project of Texas and the Innocence Project in his home state of New Mexico. Following Judge Whalen's decision in August, Clayton said the high court could take years to render its decision. Quote, "I was shocked, absolutely shocked, when it came out so quickly," Clayton said. While she'd like to think they made the decision because it was a slam dunk, she's also realistic enough to know that all of the publicity about the case could have played an important role too, Clayton said. Quote, "Judges are politicians," she said. A documentary is in the works about the case, but it has received massive media attention since December 1991, when the prosecutor who represented the state during the appellate process came to the conclusion Reyes was innocent. That attorney, Dennis Cadre, sent a letter to then-Governor Ann Richards asking for Reyes's conviction to be overturned. His widow, Yvonne, attended Friday's hearing. Cadre's attempts to get the conviction overturned were unsuccessful, but his attempts started a snowball effect. Ryan's supervisor, a bishop, came out in support of Reyes, as did members of both the New Mexico and Texas legislatures. Journalists from the Austin American-Statesman and Houston Chronicle wrote about the case. A book was published, and A&E did a segment on Reyes. His plight was also featured on numerous podcasts. Odessa Police Chief Michael Gerke testified in March his son, daughter-in-law, and daughter came to him last year after listening to a podcast about Reyes's case and asked detectives to pull the file. After reading it, Gerke said he wondered where the rest of the file was because there wasn't any evidence to support Reyes's conviction. Not only was there no physical evidence linking Reyes to the crime scene or Odessa, there was actually evidence proving he was in New Mexico at the time of the murder. Gerke asked detectives in his office to go over the file too, and when they came to the same conclusion, they brought in the Ector County District Attorney's Office. According to court testimony, Reyes and Ryan were both living in Denver City in December 1981 when Ryan gave Rios a ride to his impounded truck in Hobbs, New Mexico, on the morning of December 21, 1981. The next morning, a maid found Ryan's battered body, his arms tied behind his back, inside the motel room he had rented under a false name, using a false license plate number. A silver chalice and an accordion were missing from the room and never found. The Ireland native's stolen car was found at a moose lodge in Hobbs, New Mexico, and his wallet and a bloody credit card was found at a nearby gas station. 11 months later, a drunk and stoned Rios, then aged 27, called Albuquerque police and confessed to having killed the priest with whom he'd had a sexual encounter. He then recanted. During the March hearing, John Smith testified he and his fellow defense attorney, John Cliff, were shocked, infuriated, and nonplussed at the jury's guilty verdict and sentence. He suspects they chose to convict Rios because of his homosexuality, which they had tried unsuccessfully to keep out of the trial. Also during the hearing, OPD's Sergeant Scotty Smith reminded Whalen of the evidence Smith and Cliff presented at Rios' trial. While it's unclear from court transcripts exactly when Ryan died, they know he died between 5:30 p.m. and 11 p.m. December 21, 1981, the sergeant testified. Rios has a confirmed alibi for 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. that night. He was in Roswell with a friend, and at midnight he was receiving a ticket west of Roswell for speeding, Smith said. Since it's 3 hours and 20 minutes from Roswell to Odessa, there's no way Rios could have made it from Roswell to Odessa back to Roswell in that time frame, the sergeant said. An added wrinkle to the timeline is Rios couldn't drive two vehicles at once, and Ryan's car was found in Hobbs. A former OPD fingerprint analyst, Stacy Kennedy, said that although everyone believed all of the fingerprints lifted from the crime scene had been destroyed, she found 11 fingerprint cards and photos of 6 latent prints. 7 of the fingerprint cards could be entered into an FBI database that didn't exist in the early 80s. Thanks to a combination of the new technology and old-fashioned eyeball comparisons, Kennedy said she was able to determine that bloody prints found in the room belonged to 3 dead men. Clayton said she strongly believes the men can be linked to the murders of 7 other priests and members of the clergy in Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. However, because Rios has now been declared innocent, she doesn't believe she has the leverage necessary to get law enforcement agencies to dig further into her theory, Clayton said. Quote, we were just looking at essentially unsolved crimes that all have, I believe, very marked similarities, she said. It's sad none of the men will be brought to justice, but she's beyond thrilled for Rios. Quote, this is why we do this work. This work is so hard and it's so demoralizing. We see the absolute best and worst of humanity, but it's these kinds of victories that make it all worth it, Clayton said. It's just such an honor to be able to fight for somebody like James and being able to get a favorable outcome for them, career-wise, is what I live for. It's just wonderful. End quote.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.